French. Some guys like it quiet. Some guys like it loud. This is.
You know, Gator needed to look like he needed some exercise. I don't know.
Of course, the conditions now that he has to play the shot test anyone.
You knew he would. You knew he would.
Oh my goodness.
They've come a long way together, Jim, those two. It's a great story.
Welcome into Dialed In, a podcast by the High Cotton Club, episode 70. This is your co-host, Johnny Stew. With me, as always, El Capitan Connor Hendrickson, a.k.a. Lefty Sauce, coming to you from the Casa de Hendrickson. We've got a lot for you on this episode. We've got a special guest for our member Monday, Mr. Joseph M. Sands. And then also, Connor, there was some news that dropped about Unknown this week. Tell us about the new features that we got to look forward to with Unknown.
Yeah, the past few episodes, we've kind of been teasing what was upcoming, and it's finally official and announced, and it's out there for everybody to view. So GPS and green heat maps is kind of what they're calling it, but this is the green reading books that you would expect from Strakaline. They partnered with Strakaline to really bring more of a bundle to what is already a great bundle, because if you're tired of counting up dots, if you get annoyed typing in six-letter codes for every tournament or yelling across fairways to find out other group scores, or maybe you're the guy at your club with binders and spreadsheets like 10 Cup stacked up to track handicaps and scores for your group games. If so, you need Unknown Golf, because Unknown Golf is the scoring system that weekend warriors everywhere have been waiting for. Unknown gives every player a live leaderboard for their game and integrates real handicap data into every tournament, weekend game, and individual round played. It will even post to the USGA for you. And now it helps you get your distances dialed. It helps you figure out what the greens are doing. Just another dimension to all the stats that it keeps track of, because we've seen live scoring apps before. But what sets Unknown apart is the ability to track every side bet or game that hit that you can imagine simultaneously. Just hit that challenge button at any point during your round to add additional bets, press, or challenge any other person using the app. All bets and scores are displayed on an easy-to-read dashboard, and data is tracked and easily searched to discover long-term trends and totals. For the individual, Unknown Golf tracks net, gross, and course-specific scoring averages among dozens of other data points. All the High Cotton Club uses Unknown Golf. It has for over a year now, so you should too. Visit unknowngolf.com to create your player profile and download the app. Unknown Golf, the scoring app for the serious casual golfer. Stu, we've talked about it before, the stats that you're able to track playing at the Legacy so often and see your differential and your handicap on the course versus the course handicap. Now, just another element when we go to these golf courses that we haven't played before, being able to play these practice rounds with these green reading books and stuff like that, it's going to add a whole new element to what we're able to do with Unknown Golf, and just getting better and better. They just released a new episode of their podcast, One Groove Low, with Josh Johnston and I from the Supercell. So recommend everybody go listen to that, because they talk a little bit at the end that, you know, they're not done. And by the new year, it's going to look completely different and even a whole lot better.
Yeah, it sounds like they're continuing to evolve, and they're making the Unknown app just a one-stop shop for your golfing needs on the golf course. Because you have one app that tracks your scores. You have one app that gives you your yardages. I mean, it one app that tracks your handicaps per hole, but now you can do it all in one single app. No need to pay a fee for this app or the fee for this app, but a one-stop shop. And they could just continue to evolve.
And something that's quick and simple, clean, that you don't have to hit a bunch of buttons when you're in there, because nobody loves being on their phone on the golf course. I think that's kind of why so many of us like to play golf, is to disconnect. So when you're able to set up a whole game in 1 to 2 minutes on the first tee and then score the hole in 10 seconds, like, it's just can't get any better than that. And so we appreciate Unknown very much. We look forward to the future. And if you have any questions, just reach out unknowngolf.com. But speaking of Unknown Golf, the extinction last year, the extinction this year, things are trending. registration opened last week. Well, yeah, this week really. And it filled up, I won't say quicker than I expected, but to actually see it fill up like I expected was surreal.
Man, you'd love to see that. And we appreciate all of the support and everybody who jumped on there to sign up. And if you're listening to this, I'm sorry, you'll have to go to the waiting list, but please go ahead and do that because there's always going to be things that come up with people between now and then.
Sure.
Get your name on there. This is an event you do not want to miss. This was an epic weekend last weekend. That's why we still filled up in three hours this year, 3-4 hours. It was less than a day.
So we opened up registration for, I even hesitate to say members of the High Cotton Club, participants of the High Cotton Club. If you've participated in a High Cotton Club event, you had early registration starting Sunday morning. So we had 24 hours. We filled, I think it was right about 40% of the field from that, and that's including waitlist. And so once registration opened at 8 a.m. Monday morning for, you know, the public, we filled up by 10:30. So that's 2.5 hours of public registration. Everybody paid with their deposits.
Yeah. And this is, it's an event you cannot miss because it was a knockout last year. And then this year we are anticipating the clubhouse to be done as well.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like, you're going to you'll be able to see every hole on the golf course from this clubhouse.
What did Brian say? Like 16 and a half holes.
Yeah.
And I think you can't really see
16 tee box back there, you know?
Yeah. And then you can't see 8.
Yeah.
And I think you can't see the par. Well, maybe you can see shades of 8 through the trees.
12, maybe you can't.
Yeah. You can't see 11 probably and 12. But I mean, still seeing the entire valley, right? Like when we first started to go to Park Mammoth, we talked about if Sweetens took up the entirety of the Sequatchie Valley, right? And now that you've gotten more experience at Sweetens, would you say that that's kind of an ample, not comparison, but a metaphor?
Yeah, certainly. Because when you go into Sweetens and you pull up and you come up to the clubhouse, it's just a vast, you know, valley of just, you know, a playground of golf right there. Mm-hmm. And it's the same concept when you look at this, except just a larger ballpark.
Yeah.
For it.
And a larger ballpark and a smaller valley, right?
Yeah.
So it fills it to the brim. Like I know that there's some space beyond those trees in the back part of the property, but it really feels like that's the end of the valley. And you just go back there and that's like where you would naturally stop and you turn and you come back. It's just a
different experience. If you haven't been there, you've got to go, whether it be with us or just on your own with your buddies. I can't recommend enough just going to play Park Mammoth. We went there just a couple of weeks ago, just a few of us, and you know, it was a pleasure. You know, all donations are appreciated. It was a pleasure for that. But every time I walk off that golf course, I feel so good about my golf game. I love playing that golf course. It's like if the Lord himself built a golf course for me, like that would be it.
High praise for Brian Ross there.
Thank you, Brian Ross.
I hope everybody enjoyed the kind of half episode that we did with him ahead of registration opening. If you haven't listened to that, go back, listen to episode 69 and a half. And obviously episode 69 with Mr. Jacob Beers. If you haven't listened to that, we encourage you to do so. And quickly before we kind of move on with the extinction, if you're listening, please take a second, go like, subscribe, rate 5 stars. Helps us, helps the algorithm. We would very much appreciate it. All the other podcasts are saying it, so we're going to start saying it too. The extinction, you said, you know, we're planning on making it bigger and better with the clubhouse planning to be open. Obviously, that's a huge help for us. No tent this year, food and bev through the golf. Yeah, just reach. reach out through Instagram, social media, whatever. Any kind of increment we can figure it out, but would love to get anybody who wants to be involved involved and just make this a bigger and better event for everybody. How many times we need a counter on the bottom? I need to go back through and a bigger and better counter, put it up every time I say it, and then we can make it a drinking game. Take a sip.
Yeah, just a little ticker at the bottom.
Oh man, if I was that good, oh man, we'd be doing big things. All right, so this week is Santa Slam, our High Cotton Club holiday celebration at the Little Course at Connor Lane in Franklin, Tennessee. Go ahead and make the Connor Lane joke one more time, because I know you really enjoyed that.
I just didn't know your middle name was Lane. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it's a strong middle name. I think it's a really strong middle name. I'll stand by that.
I mean, last week you said you always loved the golf course because it was named Connor. It's a weird flex for me. Just a weird flex. I just got tickled about it.
It is a weird flex. Possibly the weirdest of flexes.
And if there was maybe a golf course that was built for you, it would be a little par three golf course. With just
A thousand percent. But if there was a bombing gouge at John Stewart Road, John Robert Road, you would love that golf course.
Yeah. I understand, I guess.
Again, the weirdest of flexes, but it is funny, and I'm excited to go back there. I haven't been back there in a long time. So appreciate everybody who got into the field. When we start to look at the players who registered last week, we kind of alluded to a mixture of new faces and OGs. And so we'll run through the field here real quick. Josh Appleton getting back out there after his performance at the Gallup. So from, you know, huge contrasts.
He was out there hitting balls today. Saw him. If he says he hasn't played any, he's lying. He was out there practicing today.
I like that for him.
Hitting nothing but wedges.
I like that for him. he's going to be playing with Beers. Obviously, Beers. I think that, and I don't want to get too deep into all these guys, but, you know, a little bit of a preview, I guess. I think Beers is completely neutralized on this golf course.
I do too. Yeah. I think his strokes gained on the field are tee to green, like, you know, off the tee.
Off the tee and like the mid to long approach.
What we're trying to say, Beers, is you're a little mediocre with your wedges.
I'm not saying that. I think that he is that good with everything else. And so when you take away the best part of your game, you get a little bit, I won't say worse, but neutralized. I think that's fair to say. Alex Kreider. He's going off at 12:30.
I played with Alex this week.
Would you say it's almost a similar situation to Beers?
A little bit.
But I think he's more Ikarito. He can just get hot and it doesn't matter.
He also can get the shanks too with those wedges.
Which could be tough.
Aim a little left, Kreider.
Walt off at 12:10. First event back since getting married.
Does Walt even play golf anymore?
First event
back. Or does he just talk in the Discord?
Since getting married. Congratulations, Walt. I won't spoil who your Secret Santa is, but your Secret Santa did text me. It might not have even been your Secret Santa, it was just somebody in your group, but I think it was. It was like, hey, does Walt drink when he plays? And I said, well, he used to, but I haven't played with him since he got married, so I don't know.
No.
it's a good question.
I'll say he'll probably partake.
Oh yeah. A really cool storyline. Devin and Bryson Frederick, father son, getting out there at 12:30 with Kreider and somebody that we'll talk about here in a minute. But very cool to see Devin getting his son involved. Bryson, I think I don't know exactly how old he is, so I'm not going to butcher it. I'm fairly comfortable with his age range, but I won't butcher it. But obviously, we're not going to put him in a situation to go out and win money or anything like that. So he's just going to, you know, try to win some KPs, go around with the boys, and get a little Secret Santa action, some cookies at the end, and have a good day with the dad.
Well, if he's anything like Devin, he'll have a chance to win the whole thing.
Well, we set him up as a scratch, so I don't think
he might be. If so is Devin, except he's got 11 handicap.
If there's any golf course that he would do it at, I mean, it's a little course. So, but I think it's very cool that Devin's getting the son involved and bringing him out. And I'm very much looking forward to meeting Bryson, seeing him play. And I would love nothing more for him to get like close to the pin. I think that'd be super cool. All right. So Dominique Fusco, somebody that haven't met yet, but talked with a fair amount. He's going off at 12:20. So excited to be able to meet him. A one handicap at this golf course with the handicaps adjusted. You know, this is just a true, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with the game.
Yeah. I mean, any idea where he's from?
No, not off this, not off this. But we will be playing together. So I'll learn a lot about him and looking forward to that very much. Sam Hyatt at 12 o'clock, very generously donating some cookies to the event. So it's going to be nice to be able to munch on some cookies while exchanging gifts. Exactly. So he played in the hunt at TOEI. So seven handicap on this golf course, going to be getting a bunch of shots, has a pretty good chance, I think, to make some noise if he can just – it's one of those golf courses where you just keep it in front of you, and if you have a good short game or if you have a creative short game, you can make things happen.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've played there. I don't remember the holes being, you know, that distinctly hard, but mm-hmm. their greens typically are pretty quick, though, from what I remember. Have you played there recently?
I haven't played there in years.
I mean, if there's anything like Legends, I played Legends recently, and they roll like 13.
Last time.
It's right next door.
I was there. I just hit range balls.
Yeah.
And that's because I was going to play at Spencer Creek. So that might have been.
That was
high school.
I say that to say, like, I always felt like there was a little bit of involvement, like a little overflow there where the greens really, I felt like, are the equalizer there.
Yeah.
Almost like if they've got good speed to them.
I'm looking forward to checking it back out again with this guy in my group, Matt Logsdon. I'm always going to struggle with your last name, I think, so I apologize. There's three consonants together, and so it just kind of gets jammed up in my brain. Logsdon. Yeah, I think that's pretty good. So scratch out on the golf course. I think he's a true scratch, so expect him to make noise, like straight up.
I mean, if he's a scratch, he can hit wedges, I would hope.
Matthew Lynch off at 12 o'clock. Highest handicap in the field on this golf course. I have to think that bodes well. Again, not familiar with the game yet, but looking forward to finding out. And I think this could be a true FAFO situation.
Yeah, I mean, this is – though you have to remember, we talked about it last time. Like, this is one of those events where – you want to go out and just have fun.
For sure.
Just take it easy on everybody.
For sure. But if we're not talking about who's winning, we ain't the High Cotton Club.
Keep it friendly.
Frank McClellan driving up from Alabama. He's going to be in the 12-10 playing off four handicap. Excited to be able to meet him. Hey Blue on Instagram. I think he might be – I don't know if that's his Discord name or not, but – appreciate him been getting involved and looking forward to actually meeting him. Jordan Miller at 12:20 with me, Dominic, and Matt. So looking forward to that group. Jordan and I mean, he's good vibes for me. So maybe we can make something crazy happen. Expect him to make noise himself. I mean, he's a solid golfer.
Jordan Miller?
Yep.
Yeah, he's a lot better than you.
Evan Reynolds off at 12:30, playing off of six. Hasn't gotten involved possibly since the extinction. Maybe. That sounds kind of right. So excited to get him back out. And definitely, I think this is the perfect setup for him to go have a great day for sure. High vibes, low energy. I just go out, cruise. Good vibes in his group with Bryson, Devin, and Kreider. So I think they have a great shot all in that group. And then rounding out the field, we have Lane Rockensock with a three handicap at the golf course. Peter West with a four handicap. Lane, he's talked about it before. We've talked about it now. He wants to win one of these things. We can talk about, yeah, let's just go out and have fun. Lane's going to show up and win this thing. I think this is the one where he has the smallest margin for error, right? I think he's got a new putter in the bag, right? He's got the Mez. I think this is where the Mez shows up for him.
So the entire Apple Train group is... Yes. Team Mez now?
They've gone full Team Mez.
Wow.
I might be fabricating this, but I'm pretty positive.
I never really thought he was a bad putter to begin with.
I think that
Not that if you're a bad putter if you use a Mez, but if you switch to a Mez, you're usually struggling.
I don't think that he was a bad putter. I never thought that.
You see?
But he thought that he was a bad putter in moments.
Okay.
And so when you think that about yourself, sometimes you just need to look at something different, like putting it right-handed.
So what do you think about, like, I don't want to chop shop too much about this, but like go to like Lab Golf. So you've got, you know, Adam Scott, now Will Zalatoris, Lucas Glover, you know, they're using the broomstick Mez.
And I said like, Mez, I meant Lab. I've confused the two.
Yeah, like it could be a different, like Mez is just one of their putters. But you think that's a, you know, sort of the vibe they're going for like if okay if you can't putt like you can putt with this, like is that the first step to like gaining traction into the golf equipment world, you think, with a new design and a new science and everything? Was like, okay, well, I feel like it's pretty smart because you look at them, and we, of course, none of them are bad putters, they're professional golfers, but you look at Adam Scott, you look at Lucas Glover, Will Zalatoris, they've all had their own, you know, issues with putting with contemporary type putters, but now they seem to be just rolling it really well. I wonder if it's the technology or is it really just that good of a putter?
The video that I saw that sticks with me and has made me think about the switch is they had another brand's putter, and they had it in one of these like zero gravity hinge things. Have you seen this?
Yeah,
video? And the head is just spinning all over the place. And then they put their putter in there and it's just locked in.
Yeah.
And I'm so confused.
I don't know how it works.
I don't understand the science.
I don't understand it.
But I don't understand how the science behind a bunch of stuff works and I do it. So it definitely has my curiosity. I haven't gotten a new putter since I was in college. So I don't know. Maybe that's, this is a ricochet. I'm not clay. So I don't want to switch. Like, I'm decent enough. I just want to get better at what I do instead of trying to do something different. I think that's where Clay's gotten to. But like, Clay knows, because I give him a hard time all the time. Like, he was really bad at tinkering. And so now.
You can go too far down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. That. And I think you can go too far to where I am, where like I haven't gotten any new clubs except for the Frankenwood since college.
And it's your favorite club.
Yeah.
Okay. What's that tell you?
Exactly. So
he's wrong, Clay. You're not. Tinker away, buddy.
I think there's a fair balance. And I'm trying to hand up. Like I think I'm doing that a lot this episode. Hand up. I don't have all the answers, but I think a fair compromise, and I need to go a little bit that way. And I think that the Lab may be my first step into that direction. I really need new irons. Like, I'm swinging telephone poles, but until I gain that much volition, I might just try a new putter.
You've had those irons since your last Instagram page where you were, you know, hitting four irons, six irons, 235, right?
Just three iron. Thank you. And Erin told me she found that.
No, she did not. I sent it to her.
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask. You're a bad guy. You're a bad guy. Speaking of bad guys, let me talk about the Mother Collector quickly. If you're a listener from the Refuge, and I hope that we still have some people listening from the Refuge. The Mother Collector is our member guest. Registration will be opening to the Refuge here in just a few weeks. We're going to make our member guests, but also like a little bit of a not mini extinction, but we want to bring some more folks in from the Refuge and experience a cool weekend. Yeah. Like we experience, fill it up, have three full cabins. And my member guest, whatever, is from the Refuge. We said you're a bad guy. This is this guy's whole rap. Night Train Lane coming in hot. Oh. We are going to make some noise in Mississippi, and I can't wait.
I need a partner as well, so I think I may have to turn to the Refuge as well. Because the guy I was going to invite, yep. The same guy I was going to invite last year, it's the same weekend as their kid's spring break, so he's going to be in Florida. So I may have to turn to the Refuge as well.
I think there's some people on the Refuge looking, so hopefully we can, fill up some guest spots and then hopefully still kind of get some full spots.
I'll see what Mustache is doing.
Oh, we would love that.
My brother in Christ.
We would love that. Get some Supercell boys involved. We definitely need, hopefully, they might just fill a couple teams of their own. So enough about that. Getting back into Santa Slam. Again, we talked about it before, but the format is two loops at the little course because it's just nine holes. Everything's par three. I think the longest hole is 190. Shortest hole is like 76, 60, something like that. There's that one really short one kind of under some trees. So we're going to be playing at 50% handicaps adjusted to the golf course. So that's all the handicaps that I just read off. That's what those are, 50% adjusted to a golf course that's rated at like something really low.
I'm surprised it's rated. Usually they don't rate par three courses like that. Well, but it is owned, I guess, by it's part of the Tennessee Golf Association, right?
It is.
Yeah.
So I can't remember how we found that rating, but yeah, we came up with the best thing that we could because it's one of those things where you have to create a custom course. And that, because you can't post this round. Again, we talked about that after the beers episode. Kind of almost disappointing that the first actual events and setting up all these standards, we're not able to post it. But hey, we posted our jackpot.
The first actual event after all of it was
Dilly D's jackpot at Park Mammoth. And then, I think we're kind of maintaining that momentum, even though we've really had some crappy weather. Well, it wouldn't be dialed in without some technical difficulties. And this is High Cotton Captain Connor Hendrickson, a.k.a. Lefty Sauce, sincerely apologizing as Stu and I were trying to process the episode. Some technical issues happened and we got about 80% of the episode processed. So you heard everything except the last 15, 20 minutes of Stu and I talking and some life advice where I kind of got on a soapbox and let some people know how I felt about some things. Spoiler alert, somebody knocked down my mailbox. So we'll get into that next week. I'll get back on my soapbox. But again, apologies to having to cut off Stu and I's conversation a little bit early, but we look forward to bringing in Mr. Joseph Imsan. Before we do that, I want to take a quick break and shout out the folks at the Rudder at Anchor High Marina. If you've been following the High Cotton Club for a while, you know that Patrick Patton, aka Papa Zulu on the Refuge, crushes everything that he does for the High Cotton Club. If you're watching on Spotify and you see all the great stuff in front of me and behind me, it's all in collaboration with Patrick Patton, and it's a testament to his effort, energy, and execution to whatever he puts his mind towards. And he puts that same effort, energy, and execution towards what they're doing at the Rudder at Anchor High Marina in Old Hickory Lake in Hendersonville, Tennessee. Voted one of the best outdoor seating spots in Nashville over the past year. And although the winter is kind of bucking its head, if you're watching, you can see I'm in a thick coat today. You still want to get out to the Rudder at Anchor High Marina for their happy hours Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at 2 o'clock outside of their events. Right now, not a huge event schedule, but it's a great opportunity for you to plan your holiday outing, whatever you might be doing with your business for Christmas. So make sure you check them out at 126 River Road in Hendersonville, Tennessee. Give them a call at 615-348-0129 or check them out online at therudderahm.com. That's the Rudder AHM, like AcreHighMarina.com. We appreciate their support very much. And again, apologies for the technical issues, but without any further delay, let's get to Joseph Imsan, aka Jim Sand.
Welcome into Dialed In, a podcast by the High Cotton Club, episode 70. This is your co-host, Johnny Stu. Join with me as always, El Capitan, Connor Hendrickson, aka Lefty Sauce. Coming to you on a late night evening at the Casa de Hendrickson. Hope you had happy holidays. I know Thanksgiving, we're recording this before Thanksgiving, but hope everyone had a happy Thanksgiving. We got a special guest with us today, Mr. Jim Imsan. Jim Imsan, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Good evening, guys. It's crazy to be joining you. I've been listening to this for like a year and a half. So it's odd, but happy to be here.
Well, we appreciate you listening. We appreciate you being part of the High Cotton Club. And it's a privilege to be able to kind of spotlight and highlight you as one of our Alabama members. But you go well beyond just a High Cotton Club member as far as it goes on the Refuge and all of the Roost events and all that stuff. So I'm excited to kind of dive into some of that, learn some more about you and share some more with those who don't know as much about you. Like for me, it was kind of embarrassing. We'll get into the little clucker and the time that we spent down in Mississippi together. But we got down there and finally, you said you've been listening for a year and a half. I'd probably known you for a solid 2 years at that point. And I finally asked you, like, so where'd the Refuge name come from? Jim Sand. I always assumed it was some like old timey baseball player or something like that. And how stupid of me to not think it's just the first name or first initial of your first name, Joseph, and your last name, M. Sand. It's not that complicated.
No, it's something I do for like video games, like create a golfer, create a baseball player. It'll be like Jim Sand, Jimmy Sandoval, Jimmy Sandberg, just whatever you can do to like get the announcer to pronounce the last name and not just be like number 10, you know, just so it actually feels like you're doing something. So, and then it carried over and just keep it simple.
But that's a common theme. I think with everyone's like screen names and usernames that we use, it's all like stuff we used either for, you know, beginning on the internet for me. And then like mine's my old AOL, like AIM name. And then you got a lot of guys who use their gamer names for PlayStation and Xbox and everything like that. I like Jim. I am San.
That's what, well, when I was young, it was like, I am San. That was what they said about my dad. So
I like that. So talking about your Refuge name, obviously NLU, we are the NLUers for Tennessee, Alabama, Kentucky, parts of Mississippi. We touch a little bit of everywhere around the South. Shout out Clay up in Southern Indiana, but you hold it down in Alabama, but you started just kind of on the Refuge. Tell us how you started following NLing up and how you got into the Refuge.
Right around 2019, I had kind of just decided I'm going to jump into golf. I was like a range rat for years, like 10 years. I would hit the range like once a month, twice a month, and was always just sort of waiting on friends to want to go play like that one time a year. And eventually just got tired of it and decided I'm going to go out there, go to my local muni, walk around, just jump in and figure it out. And then in doing that, I've found, you know, different golf content, mostly like swing advice on YouTube. Then the algorithms start feeding you things. And then I started getting the advertisements for like the No Laying Up summer collection. And it was just a little like small little advertisement that they did for their clothing and stuff like that. I couldn't quite figure out what was going on. I'm like, this looks great. They're doing a good job, but where are like the videos? And so just kind of like trying to dig into that and watching a few of their stuff. And then eventually found my way to the podcast, and then found my way to the Refuge. And so it just sort of getting addicted to golf, like even more than I ever thought I would. And then just wanting more and getting into it.
Neil would be thrilled. Yeah. Well, the marketing campaign converted. Golly, that's good stuff right there. We like that. So diving in with some of that, you know, early merchandise stuff, getting into the videos, quickly transitioned into the Refuge and getting involved with some events. Tell us how that kind of started, and then we'll get into a little bit of your Roost experience.
Well, I remember before even the Roost began, there were all the roll call threads and things like that. And there were, you know, a few Alabama guys here and there trying to get together, play. It was, you know, with, you know, mixed results. And then there had been talk of the Atlanta guys coming over to LaGrange to play at the Fields. And I was like, well, you know, let me go over there and try that out. And that event ended up getting pushed back like 6 months. But then, you know, Chan Flato really stepped up and took some initiative and got, you know, Jay and a few other guys. And we met up at Bent Brook and then later on over in Farmlinks. And, you know, we all got to know each other and ended up, you know, talking a little bit more on the Refuge, things like that. And then I guess when they launched the roost, we were kind of paying attention to the kind of like, what's going to happen. Is it going to be an Alabama roost, Louisiana? You know, we figured Georgia, Tennessee, all that would be there, but we didn't know how it would shake out. And then, you know, once that really got going, the events just started springing up left and right. The, you know, monthly games, the match plays, all that stuff just sort of coming out. And I think it's been, you know, big for you guys, like tying people together like that.
For those who may not exactly know where you're located, you're originally from Montgomery, correct?
Right.
But live in Auburn now.
Yeah, just moved a few months ago. Just kind of needed a change, so we moved 45 minutes away.
So how far is LaGrange where the field is?
It's probably another 35 minutes away. So it's a pretty easy little trip there.
Exactly. So just to provide a little context on how close you are to Georgia, to places like the fields, which we went down to this past year, we can definitely talk about the Snake County here. But it sounds like the rail might have actually been the final round. One of those is how you actually kind of took the dive into those roost events or the refuge events.
Yeah, so after playing with some of the Alabama guys, I'm thinking, like, I want to do more of this. I know these people are getting together. And some, like, I think before COVID, they had done an event in San Antonio, and they blew it out. It was a huge deal. And I know they were doing things like that. Coming out of COVID, you know, some of the events were kicking back off, and people were trying to get together. And I was looking at the sign-up sheet. There were still, like, a few spots for people in Pinehurst. I've been wanting to go to Pinehurst and just see what it's all about. And it was a, you know, just a great opportunity at that price point. And Double Bogey Dave was running it. So I jumped on it, and it was awesome. Got the chance to play Pinehurst number 3 and Southern Pines with a few guys. And I'm still friends with some of those guys now.
Awesome. And what event was that? Was that Donnybrook?
That's the final round. So it takes place.
The final round. Okay.
Yeah. It's like New Year's weekend, or like three days around New Year's. So it's a good time.
Okay, so you've been back to Pinehurst a couple times because that's how you got your NIT spot this past year, is at the Donnybrook, right?
Yeah, like a random drawing that picked me into the Donnybrook, and then my name getting picked out of a hat at the Donnybrook, and then that's how I get to the NIT. So just, I don't know if you can get any luckier than that.
Sick.
So out of kind of those events, that transitions into you going to actually play in the Stankonia, right?
Yeah, so a few, I think they probably had even tossed it out there before that. So the Stankonia happened in March. Crazy conditions, maybe not as bad as the NIT. I'm sure you guys, I know you guys have talked about that a few times. We might get into it again, but just glassy greens and insane wind. I got my doors blown off. And it was kind of tough pill to swallow, but those things can really kind of serve as a wake-up call, like, I need to get better. I need to focus. I need to kind of learn how this works and compete. So that was my first or second, like, real taste of competition there.
Love it. Well, getting into some more of the competition that you've experienced, you know, you're a veteran of the High Cotton Classic. You're a veteran of the High Cotton Club now. But it took us a while to pull you over from the Stankonia, or not from the Stankonia, but from the Peachtree Collective. When the roost kind of kicked off, explain what your perspective was, and then how you made the decision to eventually join the High Cotton Club.
Well, I had, you know, sort of talked with those Atlanta guys a little bit, and I just assumed since I was closer to Atlanta than Nashville, I was like, well, I guess I'll just go to that one. Not really considering, you know, if they're playing at 8 a.m. in the morning for like their monthly game, that means I've got to get there at like, I don't know what time, or get up, but it's just going to be very difficult to do. But then playing with them at the Stankonia, seeing them a few other times at other majors and stuff like that, it was fine. And then when you guys were trying to build out that Alabama High Cotton Classic bracket, and it's just full of guys I've been playing with for like 2 years, it's like, well, you know, if that doesn't fill up, they don't get to play. It's, you know, it's a good opportunity for me to jump in there. And I've already been, you know, playing with you guys a little bit and having an awesome time. So geographically, you guys have already been in Alabama. You've got a lot of the guys I've been going with for a while and meeting up with, and figured, you know, I'll jump into and fill out the bracket and try to get more involved with you guys.
And one of those events that you did that was the first Yellowhammer at Highland Park. And although it was a smaller field, it was kind of that core Alabama group that you're referring to that got out to those earlier kind of Alabama exclusive events from the Refuge. What was that experience like to actually get out there as, you know, something a little bit beyond what you guys had organized yourselves?
Yeah. So, I mean, we'd gotten maybe seven guys to show up to the first one at Benbrook. And then the second one was a little bit tougher. Like, people say they're going to come and then, you know, you never know. But then when you guys did the Yellowhammer, and, you know, we had at least 12, maybe 16 people there. Half of them I knew before. The other half were people I didn't even know, even from the Refuge or anything. So it was impressed to see these people come from even further away that I didn't know or have any connection to, but they showed up and came out and supported it. And I don't know, I had an awesome time just reconnecting with guys and getting to meet new people. And it was super well run. You picked a great course. I really want to get back there. Great match play course. Maybe that'd be a good place for a High Cotton Classic match.
No doubt about that.
Yeah, I didn't get to go play it, but I'd heard about everybody talk about the course. Like, that was the one takeaway from the Yellowhammer the first time around, was the course itself. Mm-hmm. And then I saw Will have a few matches there during the High Cotton Classic with it. And that still, like, throughout, that was the takeaway from it, was it seems to be a bit of a risk reward type of golf. Like, it feels like it's built for match play.
I think so. I mean, growing up and going to Mississippi State, like, that was the golf course that you hear, like, everybody has shot their career low at.
It's short enough, but not – it's certainly not boring. It's a great design where you can go for it on some of the short fours. You can go for it in two on the fives. You can also get really punished and end up in some bad spots. I thought all the par threes were really cool with, like, there's one that has just sort of a big – like, buffer on the left side. So if you pull it, it just kicks and shoots all the way across the green to the right. And, you know, it was a great time. Tough, but I think gettable and interesting.
Well, how would you compare? Obviously, the venues are drastically different between Highland Park and Cherokee Ridge, but the event from year to year grew tremendously, and hopefully we'll kind of have the same kind of momentum next year. But what was it like for you just as a competitor to go from, you know, the early Refuge meetups in Alabama to last year's Yellowhammer to this year's Yellowhammer?
It's been great to see people buy in and take ownership of something that sort of came out of thin air. I mean, you're obviously at the top. You take that big leadership role and the planning role with the gifts, the formats, the rules and everything like that. But you see other guys step up and they sort of want to just jump in, be a bigger part of it, not just to help, but they know they get a lot out of it too. And I've really noticed that throughout the Refuge and the Roost, of getting what you put in. I think the events are great, really, no matter the course. I struggled at Cherokee Ridge. That course played, when you don't know where you're hitting the ball, it plays a lot longer because you just want to kind of find your ball among the leaves and the firm conditions. Some real funky designs out there too, but I'd like another crack at that course. And I'm all for moving it around as well. Showcase the state. We've got, you know, more than just the RTJ trail around here. We've got some good courses and the guys are going to show up. And, you know, I think wherever you put it, it's going to be fine.
Well, I think you're definitely going to get another crack at Cherokee Ridge before the Yellowhammer next year. Sounds like you'll get a chance to represent High Cotton against the Cherokee Ridge boys. So stay tuned for that. But I think that exactly what you said, Alabama is more than the RTJ Trail.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what so many people kind of get stuck on. And so it's a privilege for us to try to go around, and especially in the High Cotton Classic, it's such a great opportunity for people to see different courses and all throughout the state.
Yeah, so talk to us about your path to the NIT this year. So remind me again, where did you get your spot to get to the NIT this year where we went to at Frisco?
So I went to the Donnybrook in the very beginning of March, which was at Pinehurst. We played number two, number four, and then I added a round at Tobacco Road and Pinehurst number five. And so it was coming out of the winter. I hadn't swung a club, like, hardly at all, maybe the week before, because I'm also in the process of moving. I go out there and I struggle. I played with Big Randy on number four, and I couldn't get off the tee. And then number two, the very first hole we played, the guy's like, you need two golf balls total. Like, you're not going to lose a golf ball here. And I hit it right at this, like, drain cover, lost it, couldn't find it. And so we got through the round on, like, one or two more golf balls. Some of the worst golf I've ever played, but I don't know. For me, getting my teeth kicked in these big events like this, it pushes me because I end up coming back stronger and doing well. But that night when they were giving out the awards for the champions, it was, you know, Andrew Simpson won for the net, and then Andy Wass won for the gross, I think. And then my guy Mitch won the putting contest. And like, oh, we got one more. And then they pulled a name out of it. DJ pulled a name out of a hat, and he said, Jim Sand. It was weird when you're going up there and standing next to the guys who actually did win there and earn their spots. But, you know, you can't take it from me. I was there. I went. So it's all good.
Well, coming from there and then going, we'll jump all the way to the NIT this year. Tell me your initial thoughts when you walked onto the compound there.
So I knew it was going to be vast. I was expecting flat and big. I didn't know all the infrastructure was just going to be right there in just a row like that, where you had resort and then clubhouse, these like condo villa type things, crazy putting course, and then the actual course all out in front of you that you could just walk along the whole way. And then the PGA headquarters is like even further down. I was a little intimidated because you pull in and there's this giant parking lot, and then they're just trying to like get your car, get you in, get you moving. And you're just like, I want to take it in a little bit, you know? But some of their systems are up and running tight, and they've got it going. Other things, it's like, you know, just go outside, walk around, and maybe get the lay of the land yourself, because it's a big, big place. Two golf courses, like almost right on top of each other. And then, you know, we had, it felt like we had the run of the place to ourselves, like all 96 of us, even though there were some big timers there alongside us.
No doubt about that.
Yeah, I thought about that too. Like, especially the first day when we played the par three course, and we're getting around and we're coming, and the day before, you know, somebody sends us pictures of like John Rahm out there. The next day, we're coming in from our first round. You got, you know, Wyndham Clark out there on the par three. It's like, where do they hide all these people at? Because it honestly just seemed like it was us out there all weekend.
I think that goes big credit to Aaron. As big as that place is, with as many as other people that are there for whatever reason, I mean, for 96 people to be both spread out and crammed in together, it was like so organized, and we really were able to socialize off on our own, but also kind of get to experience the place.
Well, another, it doesn't compare at all, but another overnight event that we have is the Overlook. That was one of those first events that you had in the High Cotton Club, that kind of introduced you to a bunch of new people. Can you tell me a little bit about why the Overlook is so special and what kind of about that event left its impact on you last year?
Again, like seeing the amount grow from the Yellowhammer. I mean, it was, I think, 12 at the Yellowhammer. Would you have close to 20 at the Overlook on like early January, cold, yeah, 16, wet,
20,
mm-hmm,
something like that. It was a bigger turnout in a, you know, not golf time of year. I mean, it was a fine day to play, but usually you're not. I don't expect to see a lot of people show up, you know, that time of year to come out and play an event, but I thought it was great, a great course. It's great for JT to get to show off his course like that. I'd met him a few times before. Great guy. And I don't know, I thought we had a really good turnout, and it was a good event, and I can't wait to go back.
Love it. Well, the event that everybody has marked their calendars for and registration is now open for the Extinction. Okay. It's the granddaddy of them all, just like the Rose Bowl for the High Cotton Club. So what are your thoughts heading back to Park Mammoth? What do you feel like your chances are maybe to clinch your spot back into the NIT? Overall Extinction thoughts and excitement level?
The first extinction that I went to was this past year. I unfortunately couldn't make the first one. I had some family stuff come up at the last minute and I had to bail. But this past year, it was an extension of kind of the good streak that I was on. The first time I'd really competed in an event was at this past Stankonia and finished like, you know, made it to like that second round of playoffs, got knocked out. But that was a huge step. And then when I got to the extinction, I just looked around and was like, I can play here. Like, this is for me. I'm just going to rip it and I'll probably find it. If I don't, it's just a double and I'll score on the next one. And it worked out that way. I think I finished somewhat middle of the pack. As soon as you get, you know, the sooner you can adjust to the greens there, the better. But you can just hit it out there. And the hole designs are incredible. I mean, what stuck out to me was on that first par five on my first round, those guys were videoing our tee shots and I like slipped and topped mine right into the junk, but was able to get out of it, get on the green and I birdied the hole. And I'm like, man, this is my kind of course right here. Like, get penalized, but hit a shot and get out of it. You know, like play, you can play here. And then you've got to hit shots to score. I mean, like number eight, I mean, come on, but the uphill shots, the downhill shots, like it just gives you so many different looks. I mean, short fours and gettable pulls are great, but I mean, when it's just like one after another, like even the holes that are less notable, like if you just studied it, you'd be impressed with what it is, you know. I think it's an awesome golf course. I can't wait. I want to go back before the extinction at least twice, but just got to fit that in the schedule.
Sure. Well, we, you know, there's some opportunities. Farmers Cup, yeah. The opportunity after you make the regional team. Like, hey, there's chances here, baby.
I'm still bitter about the Derby. I had a putt to just – all I had to do was knock it close, and I smoked it by the hole and gave D-Ball, like, a really nasty downhiller, and we couldn't get it done. But, like, I don't know.
Hey, D-Ball's not going to make that one.
That was on me. All I had to do was just baby it up there. We would have gotten through. But I think about that place all the time. And I don't know if – I know I've talked to people at the NIT. I was kind of talking it up a little bit. I think maybe like Jeff from Oklahoma, you know, he was there last time. I know he's dying to get back. There are a lot of people who've got it circled. And, you know, the day of registration – be on your computer because I think it's going to go fast. Like, get ready, get your mind right, and get in there.
Yeah, and if you haven't been back since the last extinction, you're going to notice some changes when you come back for the next one. The clubhouse, I believe, is going to be done by then, right?
That's their plan. They have every intention of having the clubhouse fully operational with them providing food and bev. So, yeah, this year's extinction – I know last year was cool and all with the tent, but like this year should just be truly a step up.
Okay. And we're not going to say anything else, but there's some dirt being moved out there.
No doubt about that. There's
some dirt being moved out there.
Flat earthers can't deny that one.
You might be surprised when you pull in.
Okay. That's interesting. There's a lot of land out there.
So before we get into some questions and some life advice, I want to talk to you about the best. We were talking about derbies. One of the best memories that I have directly with you, and that came at the end of one of the days that we had at the Little Clucker. The Little Clucker was just kind of our excuse to get back to Mossy Oak and Old Waverly in between last year's Mother Clucker, our member guest, and this year's. Registration for that is open right now. That's Mother Clucker is our member guest in Mississippi with rounds at Mossy Oak, Old Waverly. We're going to try to play the MSU golf course. We're going to go to the MSU baseball game against LSU. It's just a great weekend, and you got to participate in our kind of, you know, pit stop in our path to that. So we ended up playing that E9 together at Mossy Oak, and just like everything that we needed to do, we did. It was so sick. It was wild. But talk me through that weekend and what sticks out for you.
That derby was ridiculous. I have no explanation for what happened there, but it was awesome. But Mossy Oak and Over Waverly, those have been on my list for a while, since like going back to 2019 when I started even looking at this stuff of courses I wanted to travel to, and to get to go with like all of the details hammered out by you guys, and all I had to do was just sign up and show up, and we had a blast. The lodging right next to the putting green, and you can't ask for anything better with a fairway behind you where you can just sit there, drink coffee, watch people play, or once people clear out, you know, maybe get out there barefoot and have the run of the place to yourself as well. The courses themselves are amazing. Mossy Oak is, if you liked the courses at the NIT, I think Mossy Oak kind of bears some resemblance to those. Demanding off the tee, you've got to hit not just long shots, but accurate shots. You know, I hit a few that I thought were just some of the best drives I've hit, and then just too far, like the wrong club, the wrong type of shot. The clubhouse and everything, the course at Old Way really was just a really C-suite experience, A-plus everything there. I really enjoyed it, and I played pretty decent. I think I gave you a run for your money in our match for a little while there, and then kind of fell apart on the back. Hate to see that, but you know, a little bit of my own doing there. But you know, you gotta bring it if you want to beat Connor. So I had it for a little while. I couldn't hold on to it.
It's always fun to battle either way.
Yeah, for I sure, mean, man.
I have the same sentiment for both courses. Like that's actually, I didn't think about the drawing the line between what we played in Texas to Mossy Oak, but I honestly, yeah, like it's similar. Mossy Oak has just got, like, you know, their bunkers are on steroids, but and then Old Waverly's just, you know, very just proper golf course, a proper old country club golf course. But it was one of my favorite events of last year. You couldn't beat that.
I think the size of the event was perfect, with, like, you know, a select few guys staying in this one house together. I know you guys are going to, like, maybe double it for the spring, and it should be awesome with, like, I don't know, that many guys in these, you know, sharing a room, staying up. We're watching college football, you know, putting all night. I mean, it's a great experience. I'm not signed up, so if anybody that's not in the High Cotton Club wants to play, hit me up. I could use a guest to bring, so I'm down to join and do it again. It's an awesome, awesome place to go.
By the time this comes out, I have a feeling we'll get you a member or a guest to go with you. We'll get you hooked in on the refuge, because I know there's a bunch of folks trying to get there.
I'm in the same boat. I had my guest lined up, but it turns out to be the same week as this guy's going to Florida, the same guy I was trying to bring him last year. But I'm looking for a guest too.
I'm looking for a guest as well right now. So, you know, this is one of those events that it's going to fill up once people start to get their guests, but it's that C-suite executive feeling. You got to get that guest dialed in.
And I think the rates that we saw for this time here, I mean, I don't think you could beat that. That looks like a steal.
Especially, you know, the fall was a bit tough, but the spring, you really can't beat the value going to this place in the spring.
No, I think if you're listening, jump on that.
Yeah. And so let's jump into some questions. As far as, we got a lot of questions on the last pod as far as the NIT goes, and we may pass some of those along to you. So from Cupcake FMK, you got,
okay,
the East, West, and the par three course.
Kill the par three. I mean, it was fine, but I mean, we can crush High Noons. We were doing it all through the round, you know, the East course, West course. I mean, there was no shortage of those. It was okay. I don't think it really, with playing with those golf balls, they were trying to give us, or get us to give them some feedback of, like, hitting off the mat and holding these greens. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I play the AVX, but I mean, I don't know.
I still am not sold on that. I tried to play them since I got back, and I'm not. They feel really soft to me.
And definitely marry the West. I had a good time out there. The first round, I really thought I had something. I couldn't get the ball in the hole, but I was hitting some shots. I mean, I was finding fairways. I was getting it near the green. And then, like, the first few times out there chipping, and your ball just kind of takes off and rolls completely off the other side, you figure out I'm better off bringing putter. But, you know, I got some points. Didn't get close enough to my quota on either round, but I'd go out there and play that course tomorrow. I mean, I love the West course. It was the short four downhill. I mean, I'd pay just to hit two shots on, you know, on that hole.
Yeah.
And the drivable four where you have to, I hit that green twice, the one where you have to carry the trouble, but you have all the left to bail out. And it's really just like a nice, well-struck three wood. Hit that green both times, put it off the green both times. So that was tough. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. It was, I could not figure out those greens there. And then I guess F the East course. But that back nine's awesome. I mean, I really, when I started like making better contact and getting my ball in play to where you could actually, you know, try to hit some scoring shots, it was a lot of fun. The wind was tough, but I mean, you don't get to play in conditions like that very often. And despite getting beat up, you need to just try to appreciate it and then get on the speed training in the off season. Maybe you can come back next year and punch it back. We'll see. We'll see what happens, but enjoyed that. Really, really cool hole designs out there. And it's hard to believe they're going to play a major there, but I can't wait to see it.
That might be the best answer that we've gotten on that, because I think, so. I think you kill the swing. I agree with that. You marry the one who's always going to be there for you. Going to be fun. You can go.
I would agree with Mary in the West.
And then F the East because it's going to F back. I love that. I love that.
I'll catch you next
year. Go out and play the East every day. I would quit golf.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. If
I got to walk every day and shoot 86, yeah.
I don't disagree there.
I think like the high noon consumption on the East was like much lower. It was sort of like, I don't know, people were really having to like think about what they were doing and minimal distractions. I don't think we put too many away until maybe later in the round when we were resigned to our fate.
Do you think that was offset by the how many were drank during the final round walking around?
That was ridiculous. I really wish I had brought one of the closest to the pin coolers I had won, because that would have been a nice little way, like just shove a few down in there and carry them with you. Because I walked all 18 with you guys, and
which I haven't said, I don't think I probably said to you, but I haven't said publicly, like it was awesome being able to turn around and see one of our guys there.
Yeah,
like, and every time I looked at you, like, I felt bad because I wasn't making you proud, but like you gave me a little bit of that inspo, like, come on, do it.
I would try to pick up my phone and look at it, and I was like, okay, man, like, hey, you got it. You got it. Just, you know, hold it steady. I wasn't going to. I was standing there just to watch the tee shots, and I told a few guys, like, hey, I'll meet you guys over in the ice house to watch college football, like Auburn's playing. And then I just ended up following along. I don't know. I just got sucked in. I was like, you know, that was my kind of motto the whole trip was, there's no guarantees you're ever going to get to come back here. Like, I didn't win my way in this past year. I'm going to have to work to get back, soak it all in, like go walk the full 18, hang out with Josh, watch the shots, enjoy the course, soak it in and have something to look back on and say you got as much out of it as you could.
Probably walking around hanging out with Josh and Cal from from SoCal was our locale. Probably worth the price of admission by itself.
It helped that the turnstand had the tab picked up allegedly. So we just kind of went in there a little bit. A few of us snuck away, trudged through the grass, and then caught back up a few holes later. And that helped the morale a little bit. And had to do some big time back stretches because that's a lot of walking. That's a lot of uphill, downhill. I know it couldn't have been easy for you guys. And like, God bless your caddies for carrying your clubs for you through that round. I couldn't have done it.
Yeah, that's the thing about having an event like that on such a tough golf course, because there's just not like a ton of great golf being played, you know? It's like, you don't want to come out there and you want to watch people making birdies and sticking it close. And like, we're just
grinding for bogeys.
Like grinding.
It's a hard place to hit shots. It's a hard place to hit your tee shot. And then, I mean, like your layups and stuff like that. It's just, you know, for me, if you hit like a bad tee shot, you're almost okay, because it's okay, well, I'll just grab this 5-iron and I'll just wail on it because I've got room there. But if I did a good drive and actually had to think about the next shot, it's like, oh, I have to hit an amazing shot to get to the green now, or I have to lay up with like way less club and that's going to feel terrible too. I mean, it's a very strategic, but you have to execute like every shot. You have to execute every shot.
Yeah, I
did not.
I did not. I kind of like you said about Cherokee Ridge, like, yeah, I would probably like another crack at it. I'm okay if I don't. Yeah. I'm good. If it comes, it comes. If it doesn't.
Yeah, that West course, yeah.
Yeah, but
I don't think that West course. Hearing Aaron maybe mention that it could possibly not be there next year, I don't think anyone's going to shed any tears over not having to play that course again. But it was, you know, it's both a privilege and a punishment.
Yeah.
That's a great way to put it. So we could keep talking to you and dive into more of this stuff, but don't want to take up too much of your time. So before we dive into life advice, I do want to give you a chance to talk about the Southern Shootout. That's something that you've worked with the Peachtree Collective on that will probably be coming out right around this podcast. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on around the Auburn area?
Yeah, we've got an event in just a few weeks, December 8th through 10th. We're going to play at the RTJ here in Opelika. I played there a couple days ago, surprisingly firm and fast, despite the rain we've got. I think they are starting their overseed for the fairways. It's the lake course, I think, is great. They used to have a PGA Tour event there. They do a great job with the conditioning, and there's some really, really cool holes out there. The links course is very demanding. I would put it in a similar vein to the course we played at the NIT, where that fairway might be sideways, and you might have to carry it over marsh to get it on there. You've got to hit some challenging, demanding tee shots out there, and it'll be a real test. Regardless of the tees we play, you're going to have to hit some good shots to get points out there. So I think we're going to be doing some group best ball. I'll have to double check the format on that, but we're playing optional rounds before and after. We've got people hanging out after the rounds in downtown Opelika, downtown Auburn. So we're going to figure it out. We're going to host people and show them a good time and, you know, have a nice little event time of the year where most people are, you know, maybe putting the clubs away, but I'm optimistic we're going to have some great weather and warm conditions and have a good weekend.
It was one of those events that I really wanted to make it to. Obviously, anytime there's an event in high cotton country, I want to show face. But it's been a crazy fall here in high cotton country. We have Santa Slam the week before, so I'm sad that I'm not going to be able to make it, but happy that you're able to be involved helping Peachtree out with that event and showing off the fine state of Alabama.
It's the point of you know, jumping into this is I want to, you know, get involved and do stuff that, you know, I wouldn't normally get a chance to do. And this being in my town, it's like I really had to kind of jump in there. And, you know, I'm friends with Quinn and Patrick and those guys, and they do a great job as well. You know, we want to support our Roost captains, and, you know, you guys are doing so much work for us and giving us these great events. It's, you know, it's crazy how much work goes into it and how often it's done. And I don't know, I'm just so appreciative of all the work that the Roost captains do. It's impressive. And I don't know, the more you think about it, the crazier it is.
Well, on that note, do you want to just kind of, I know you've mentioned in the Discord, you mentioned it on the Refuge and WhatsApp for the NIT, stuff like that. Do you want to make a final public declaration on where you stand in the Roost landscape?
Are you Peachtree or are you high cotton?
I'm high cotton, but I will never. I've got to always support my Peachtree guys too. They've done great work in their events. I'm gotten closer with those guys, and I'm happy to support them. But for you guys, I mean, there's no denying, you know, the kind of brotherhood that's there, and, you know, kind of just appearing out of nowhere. I mean, I don't know how you guys did it. I think you mentioned on a pod not that long ago, you guys didn't even know each other not that long ago. And, you know, you're like, I don't know, seemingly best friends. It's awesome to see. I love it. Nice. I love the community. I love the community that comes from all the Roosts. I'd go to all of them if I could. I'd go play with the guys in Seattle. You know, I'm in love with the idea of it. I didn't get it for a while, and I'm just all in on the whole idea of getting people to compete. You know, the idea of, you know, competing against your friends, going, you know, at each other's throat. And then when it's all said and done, you're just buddies again. And that's something I've learned from the high cotton guys is like, as much crap as you guys give each other, you're still like you're still all still really good friends. And it's like, oh man, I see that. I see it in the other ones of that back and forth. it's been really good for me to see and like, yeah, get in there and like stick your nose in there and try to play.
I love that, and I appreciate it.
I have a high cotton hat. You know, I didn't have the recruiting hat ceremony. I didn't prepare. Sorry.
We'll get you one. But no, I think what you're alluding to is, you know, honestly, we have so many events. I mean, thanks to Connor's hard work, you get to know so many guys, and once you become friends with guys, you share more than just, you know, I know how far you hit your 7-iron, but you know, you start to share more than that. So
start to break into people's houses.
Yeah, I honestly just broke into his house. So
it's impressive, and it's you know, something that it came from a message board, you know, but it's also seems pretty organic. Where, you know, the Atlanta guys, they're mostly in a city together, and you know, they've got a great camaraderie as well. But then with the High Cotton, it's, you know, 3-4 states, and they come together as well. And you wouldn't believe it if you just, you know, thought geographically it doesn't make sense, but it works out a lot. And it's almost like baseball teams, like back in high school, where, you know, a lot of these guys, you might be competing for playing time and competing for a spot, but those are also like some of the best memories you'll have, is goofing around and riding the bus and stuff like that. The ability to be like part of a team and a community that also competes within itself. And I don't know, it's really cool. I never really saw that coming in my life a few years ago.
That's special. I'm appreciate that. I'm humbled that, yeah, you,
it's all of us.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we want to see here. That's why we do it.
I'm humbled to have you part of the High Cotton Club. I think I always say it's a credit to our membership, because the High Cotton Club was formed in the light of what our membership wanted. And so, like you said, it's, if you just said, yeah, we have buddies in like 4 or 5 different states, and yeah, we just travel to different one every month or so, and we play golf, it's like, what? But no, it works, and it makes sense somehow, and it doesn't feel weird, even though when you just say it like that, yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah. The reactions have changed from, wait, you're going to South Carolina to play with people from Atlanta, North Carolina, whatever. Like, you don't know these people. I'm like, no, not really. I've maybe met a couple of them. Or I'm going to Nashville. I'm going to Kentucky. I'm going wherever. The reactions changed from like puzzled to like over time, like jealousy. Like, I think people are seeing the willingness to go and do things like that. And they're like, actually, it's awesome. And, you know, maybe they'd want something like that.
Well, let's transition into life advice. We're going to let you end us as our guest. So, Stu, why don't you lead us off?
Okay. So, mine will be, it's never been a mistake to commit a mistake, but it is a mistake to repeat a mistake.
Ooh. Say that one more again.
Got to unlock my phone now. It's never been a mistake to commit a mistake, but a mistake to repeat a mistake. So learn from your mistakes.
Mm. I will say, be the change that you want to see in the world. I think that a lot of that is kind of encapsulated in what we've talked about here during this conversation. It's just kind of like, you get what you give a little bit. So be the change that you want to see in the world, and you can apply that however in your life that fits for whoever's listening.
So something I came up with the other day, there's probably a better way to say it. It's probably someone else's, but if you can't better yourself, be your best self. And so if you've got your golf game and you're not actually improving out there, you're not hitting that driver straight the way you want to, take the game you've got and go out there and find a way to compete and get in there and do what you can, because there's more than one way to get things done. You know, maybe you're not losing weight at the rate you want to, but you can do something else. You can build a habit that maybe will carry you out, you know, in the future and help. So, you know, as someone who's going through like a lot of life changes the last year or so, you know, you've got to just take what you've got and not necessarily put things off and plan to do it next time, because, you know, you only have so many shots at it. So let's get it done right now.
I'll go ahead and say, I think that's one of the best groups of life advice that we've ever had. That was spot on. Joe, Stu crushed it. Toot toot for me. decent enough. But yeah, great, great word. Joe, is there anything that you want to leave the podcast audience, the High Cotton Club, with before we get out of here?
Just reiterate my gratitude for everything you guys do. I mean, I've gotten in the mindset that I just want to show up to everything. I'm signed up for the Open in Wisconsin in July. You know, I'm ready to go. It's just, and it just snowballs every time I come out. I mean, the Extinction was a blowout. That was crazy. But everything I do, I attend, it just, I'm further galvanized. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid even more. And I want to just take it up a notch, play better, of course, but just get out there and participate. And it's, I've never regretted it as far as the Roosts, the High Cotton Club, any of it. Of course, the NIT was a blast. It's always paid off. And the more you show up, the more you get involved, the more you put in, as you said, the more you give, the more you get. And that's, you know, effort and, you know, just participation. It goes a long, long, long way.
Well, we went surface level on a bunch of this stuff. We can sit here and talk to you for a long time, and we look forward to sitting down and talking with you again and catching up on some more stuff, whatever's happened between now and then. But Joe, from me, from all the High Cotton Club, thank you for all that you do. Thank you for your support and your involvement. Thank you for joining this episode of Dialed In, a podcast by the High Cotton Club.
See you. Thanks, guy. Yeah, appreciate it. See you guys in a few weeks.
Rich, some guys like it quiet, some guys like it loud. This is,
you know, Gator need to look like he needs some exercise. I don't know.
Of course, the conditions now that he has to play the shot test anyone.
Straight up. Yeah, look at this, Peter. Look at this shot. Look at this. Might go in. Might go in. Might go in. It is in.
Oh, he's running after it. He ran after it. He got there before the ball did.
I don't believe it.
How about that? I've never seen him do that.
You knew he would. You knew he would.
Come a long way together, Jim. Those two, it's a great story.